Flint, Michigan. How did a simple flip of a switch lead to a long-term public health crisis that tested the resilience of its residents? In this Science of Crime podcast series, we examine the chain of events that led to years of damage, distrust, and dirty water. My name is Grady Florence, and this is episode number 3, Lead Toxicology. When talking about lead poisoning, experts tend to focus on children much more than adults. This is not because adults are immune to the effects of lead, but because many of the symptoms are worse in children. Children are also more likely to get poisoned. Besides occupational hazards, people get lead poisoning by drinking contaminated water or eating or inhaling paint chips that contains lead. And older children consider breaking paint chips off of walls and then eating them. Children also absorb lead much better than adults and metabolize it slower, further increasing the risk of lead poisoning. Before I get into the effects of lead poisoning, let's define how much lead is considered lead poisoning. The unit used for lead poisoning is micrograms of lead per deciliter of blood. A microgram is 1/1000th of a gram, and a deciliter is 1/10th of a liter. Currently, if you have 5 micrograms of lead per deciliter of blood, you have lead poisoning. At this blood lead level, authorities will investigate where the lead is coming from in order to mitigate any more lead intake. Interestingly, 50 years ago, the blood lead level considered dangerous was 12 times higher at 60 micrograms per deciliter. Over time, the CDC has continuously lowered the blood lead level necessary for lead poisoning as new research emerged. Though the current limit is set at 5 micrograms, all research agrees that the ideal blood level is 0 micrograms per deciliter, and anything above that is harmful. So now that lead is in the body, it ends up in the bloodstream, either absorbed through the lungs or the digestive tract. This is also where lead starts to disrupt bodily processes. Lead damages something called the hemosynthesis chain. This is a problem because heme is a cofactor in hemoglobin. Cofactors are helper proteins, and heme helps red blood cells carry oxygen. Without it, patients develop symptoms of anemia, like fatigue or feeling out of breath. The bloodstream distributes lead all around the body. Luckily for us, most lead ends up being incorporated into bone. For adults, about 95% of lead ends up in bones. However, that number drops to 70% for children. You would think that this is good news for children. Less lead in the bones means less harm to the bones. Once lead is incorporated into a bone, the majority is sequestered away, where it cannot really cause any damage. Only some of the lead in bones can be reintroduced into the body and cause more damage. Because children incorporate less lead into their bones, more lead is left circulating, where it can cause damage. Lead's interactions with bones is a very good demonstration of how lead breaks the body. As everybody learns in elementary school, bones are made out of calcium. Our blood carries calcium ions to the bones, where calcium can be used to build the bones. Lead is also an ion and shares many of calcium's properties. This allows lead to be taken up by the same pathways and built into the bones. Calcium is a critical ion throughout the body, and lead can disrupt any process that uses calcium. Additionally, lead shares properties with other ions, increasing the array of processes lead can mess with. If lead is not sequestered away in bones, it ends up in soft tissues all over the body. One of the more affected areas is the kidneys. Lead causes a condition called nephropathy. Nephropathy is characterized by the degradation of tubular structures in the kidneys. High levels of lead, above 60 micrograms per deciliter, can result in acute nephropathy. However, high or low levels of lead can result in a chronic version of the disease. The acute symptoms can be treated, but the physical changes caused by the chronic nephropathy are much worse and can lead to total renal breakdown. Lead also severely impacts reproductive health. Above 40 micrograms per deciliter of lead affects spermatogenesis, or the production of sperm cells, resulting in a decreased sperm count and deformed sperm cells. Additionally, at lower lead levels, men experience decreased testosterone levels. Lead also impacts women's reproductive health. At lower levels, women are more prone to infertility, but at higher levels, women can experience miscarriages or premature births. Another danger for pregnant women is that a fetus will have roughly the same blood lead level as its mother. Babies can be born with developmental issues and lead already incorporated into their bones. Because some lead can leak out of the bones, these children can have chronic lead poisoning starting at birth. To learn more about lead toxicology, I interviewed Professor Gail Carlson, an assistant professor of environmental studies here at Colby. One of her areas of expertise is environmental health and toxicology, so she was quite knowledgeable about the effects of lead. Professor Carlson noted that
impacts of lead are most destructive on your brain. It blocks all kinds of calcium-dependent processes that occur in the brain.
This makes lead poisoning especially worrying in children because of their rapidly developing brain. Lead is particularly toxic to the brain because it mimics calcium, allowing it to cross the blood-brain barrier, which normally protects the brain from most toxins. Once in the brain, lead inhibits the development of new neurons and damages existing ones. Additionally, lead blocks the production of key neurotransmitters. The outcome of the damage is terrifying. At blood lead levels as low as 5 micrograms per deciliter, kids can begin to see academic issues, like irritability or inattentiveness. Tied to academic issues, there's a measurable IQ loss associated with lead poisoning. For each microgram of lead above 5, children lose between 2 and 4 IQ points. As blood lead levels rise to 10 micrograms per deciliter, behavioral issues like ADD, ADHD, anxiety, depression, and even increased aggression begin to appear. All of these symptoms worsen as blood lead levels increase. Eventually, the brain becomes so damaged it begins to swell in a condition called encephalopathy, which can result in death. However, to see the worst symptoms, a very high dose of lead is needed. The situation in Flint was, as Professor Carlson so eloquently put it,
Flint was such a perfect storm of everything going wrong and then just total negligence.
Nonetheless, it provides a terrifying look at the symptoms of lead poisoning. One of the most striking examples is the story of Naki Awakes and her son Jalen. Jalen was a hyperactive 6-year-old, but seemingly out of nowhere became hysterical, according to his teachers. Over the next few years, Jalen's issues would only increase. He would switch schools several times and eventually rack up 30 suspensions and 70 unexcused absences. The reason for Jalen's odd behavior? High levels of lead. It turns out that Jalen had been drinking and bathing in water that had some of the highest levels of lead in the city. Jalen's story is not an isolated incident either. An estimated 30,000 other children were also exposed to similar water, and the statistics are startling. The percentage of students in the Flint school system who qualified for special education doubled in the year following the water crisis. So what can be done for the people and children of Flint who are suffering from lead poisoning? The unfortunate answer is not a whole lot. Experts agree that the best possible option is to prevent poisoning in the first place. However, hospitals can use chemicals called chelating agents to treat patients. These chemicals have a high affinity for lead, which means the lead is attracted to the chelating agent and sticks to it. This allows the body to more easily dispose of the lead. Importantly, lead has a much higher affinity for the chelating agent than calcium does, so calcium is not removed during treatment. Unfortunately, this treatment only helps remove lead from the bloodstream, and while it does this very effectively, lead remains in the bone and soft tissue of the patient, meaning many of the detrimental effects of lead are untreatable. For example, even after being treated with chelating agents, cognitive scores of children exposed to lead did not increase. Additionally, chelating agents are only effective at very high levels of lead. Many of the residents of Flint would not have had high enough levels for the agents to work. The government of Flint failed its citizens when it failed to properly treat the drinking water in the first place and exposed them to the lead. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Science of Crime podcast series on the Flint water crisis. This is Grady Florence signing off.